half of the Pettit County Planning Commission work session to come to order. First item of business is the pledge of allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. The next item is director comment.
I don't have any chairman bid on reserve since 7 o'clock.
Okay, thank you. Now, is that public comment section, anyone wishing to come forward to speak on anything in the county, please come forward, state your name and address, you will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll go with that next item, which is our work session, rural cluster subdivision. Mr. Robinson, I'll be bringing that to us.
Okay, good evening, Mr. Chairman. This is just revisiting a topic that the planning commission started to talk about last spring, concerning rural cluster development in the county. So, what initiated the discussion was, you should recall, early part of last year, the proposal of the Island Hill Rural Cluster development, and on the screen, is the parcel highlighted in yellow. And this map, included this map to show its relation to Lake Monticello. And you can see that this basically is right at the edge, it joins Riverside section to the north, which you'll see on this screen. This is the sketch plan that you should recall that was approved for Island Hill. It was a total of, 48 lots plus the open space for 49 lots, and it's situated in between the Riverside section with Monticello and then Broken Island to the south. And one of the primary concerns that we heard from residents during the review of this sketch plan was the location of these lots. These lots here on the screen, I'm trying to move the cursor over. The concern about those lots directly adjoining existing residential in Broken Island. So just to recap how our ordinance regulates rural cluster development, we allow it in AR, R1, R2, and R4 zoning. The A1 is the most, the A1 requires the most amount of open space at 75% of 3/4. R1, R2, and R4 are all the same in that they require 50% of open space. And R3 is our planned community district. It still has an open space requirement. It's not necessarily a rural cluster provision in R3, but it still does require open space, which is 25%. And you may recall doing the Colonial Circle project, that project was rezoned to R3, and that was a 25% open space requirement. Again, that was not a rural cluster. And then the different densities that are in each of these districts. These densities are what are used to calculate the yield plan. So in A1, which has the largest lot size at one dwelling unit per 2 acres, R1 is one dwelling unit per 1 acre, R2, two dwelling units per 1 acre, and R4, 2.9 dwelling units per 1 acre. And out of the list of cluster developments that we have in the county, most of them, the majority of them have been developed in A1 zoned areas. There's only two, to our knowledge, that are in R1 areas. But most are in the A1 zoning district. And just to to make sure it's clear, this type of development is allowed countywide and on all property zones, A1, R1, R2, or R4.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a quick question? So that's the gross residential density. What's the minimum lot size now that you've calculated? If I can have 25 houses in this, how big a lot do they have to be on?
Believe them, I forgot to bring my ordinance with all things. I believe it says you can follow the minimum lot size of an R4 district.
Just measure requirements, or are there R4? It's on.
R4. So depending on whether the site is served by public.
Okay, so that.
Public utilities. That would determine the lot size that the cluster development could have. So in the case of Island Hill, they were allowed to have, I can't remember the smallest lot size, but it was like 0.5 acre size lots.
I don't think we have a minimum, do we?
A minimum?
Lot size, no. It's just what you can fit, if you could do it.
There's a practical minimum with the dimensional requirements. Because originally, when we first were discussing the A1 cluster, it was a maximum size.
Mm-hmm.
And the maximum size was
an acre?
No, it was less than that. It was I think it was like 3/8 of an acre, something like that.
Uh-huh.
It was very small.
Okay.
Well, we changed that so that it was made to fit the land better.
Right. Yes, that's right. And it was primarily your idea, as I recall.
But this would, rural cluster subdivisions would require, and I don't know what year, and we were required to actually by state to allow that, 40% of the rural area?
It was a minimum requirement.
The 40% is a minimum requirement.
40% for open space?
40% of the A1 property had
in the county.
Had to be set aside for clusters.
Oh, okay. And that was a state law?
Yeah.
So to talk about the comprehensive plan as far as what it speaks to for rural cluster development, it does say that they are small-scale residential areas and underlying surrounded by farmland preservation zones for environmentally sensitive land. It does mention that the cluster provision is intended to preserve land on small lots, concentrate development in a compact area, leaving the rest for preservation. And another reference to providing an opportunity for preservation, typically at the periphery surrounding the developed area. So underline those items on the screen because that points back to some of the concerns coming from the residents of Broken Island. We currently don't have I can't find a specific provision that says the open space that when it adjoins an existing residential area that there has to be some type of separation.
Buffer.
Or buffer. But as you'll see on some of the screens, the slides I will go through, most of our cluster developments that follow that type of pattern, Island Hill seems to be one of the first.
Anomaly.
Yes, that has been proposed against existing residential development and where it did not leave a buffer area.
Have you found that requirement in any other places at all in your research?
No. I have to do more research, but what I'm finding so far, I can't find any type of buffering requirement between residential.
Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. Is that something that we could do as with cluster subdivisions, like require a buffer when there's another residential type property there to protect that property?
What you're really concerned about is not the residential property, but the character of the residential property. So that if you look at what do they call this one?
Island Hill.
If you look at the Island Hill plan, on the north side, it's got very small lots from Lake Monticello. So I don't think there's any necessity for having any buffer on that side. The other side is a conventional large lot A1 subdivision. But it would make more sense to apply it in a way that's similar, not exactly the same, but similar to what you have for the industrial districts. And that is, if you have an industrial district that butts up against an industrial district, you don't worry about setbacks. But if you have an industrial district that butts against a low-density residential, for example, you got to have 100-foot setback or 200-foot setback, whatever it is. You could do the same kind of thing here.
What's the zoning on Broken? Because you need to do this based on the zoning designation.
Broken Island is A1.
Broken Island is an A1.
It's A1, and okay. I was going to mention, if I'm correct on this, it would be a non-conforming subdivision in terms of the number of lots, because it exceeds 5 lots.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it non-conforming, but it's let's say it's old-fashioned. It's a conventional subdivision rather than...
We used to be able to do many more lots than we can do now.
I believe the first plan for Broken Island was done in the early 90s.
Yeah, Broken Island is an example of the kind of subdivision that the county basically decided not to encourage. With large conventional lots on a substantial number of lots. So, you know, if you've got 3 or 4 lots, it's one thing, but if you've got 25 or 30, you have a different issue. So you couldn't do Broken Island now.
And there's 4 sections in Broken Island. Each one of them has somewhere between 10 and 15 lots.
So possible.
I think that used to be the most you could do per parcel was 14.
A possible solution would be to say when a cluster abuts an A1 zoning designation, you need to leave X feet of setbacks from the lots, the houses.
Say it had to be, you know, I'd have to think about the exact wording, right. but you'd be talking about the open space, right? You'd be talking about leaving a section of open space of a given dimension.
Okay.
Obviously, if you look at this plat, what you need to do, the problem with it is the peculiar shape here with this right. Elongation. You'd have to move it back this way to, you know, let's say here. I'm just making this up, but you do it to here so that you could come across like that.
Right, and leave the open space surrounding the right. lots, the developed lots, and
right.
put whatever 100, 200, 6, maybe, whatever.
Would it be complicated to write that type of?
No.
Sure.
You
know, just because other places don't have that, it doesn't mean that we can't be the first.
Right.
Well, you know, you got to give the developers credit. They're creative, and they were creative about something we hadn't thought of. That's a time where you start tweaking things.
That's the cheapest way to do it.
That is the cheapest. He's going to show you the way that it should be done.
Right. Oh, good. Okay.
So to continue on, the comprehensive plan does actually currently say that one of our ongoing goals is to examine the impacts of large lot development versus rural cluster developments. And then the comprehensive plan also says it encourages that a subdivision's open space be located to further the rural character of the area, designed for maximum connectivity to other open spaces of existing or potential adjacent developments, or to act as buffers to agricultural activities. Be privately maintained, not developed as part of the associated project. So to go into some examples of what's some of our existing rural clusters in the county, this is an example of Cunningham Meadows. Most of the open space surrounds the lots, as you can see there. parcel coming off of Field Loop. This is another one, this is the Habitat project on South Boston Road. Again, all of the open space for that development was designed to surround the lots in the subdivision.
So they did leave a buffer between you, all the properties?
This, and I'll mention the two previous ones were A1 zoning. This one is an R1 cluster, and the open space, which was actually numbered as a lot, it's privately owned.
It's got a house on it.
Yes. And it's kind of a, this is one of the more unique configurations of open space that I've seen. I don't know what the purpose of that leg is coming out to Lake Monticello Road, but it does separate the subdivision from this development. This is one of the better examples, Sycamore Landing out on North Boston. But this is one that it doesn't adjoin, it appears to adjoin any developments around it. But the open space does surround all of the lots. And one more example, West River Meadows out on Route 6. This is similar to the others, but the open space surrounds the lots. So wanted to bring those up because there seemed to be an understanding that this was required by the ordinance, but after studying and discussing with staff, we weren't sure what was encouraging these development patterns with the clusters. So that kind of wraps up my presentation. We put a few discussion points on the screen, and these come from conversations with citizens, particularly that one on February 5th. Me and Mrs. Eager and Mr. Miles met this man from Broken Island, and of course the buffering between residential was one concern. She was also concerned about the use of the open space, the fact that right now it could be privately owned and does not necessarily have to be devoted to all of the citizens or the residents of the cluster. So that was one item she wanted us to look at. And Mr. Miles has also brought up some thoughts about lot size. So those are just some initial points, but I'm sure there's many more.
You could change the large lot to if there's a farm and there's a farmhouse, I'll take my house and I want to do a cluster, but I still have cattle and I still live there in my farm. I think that then I should be able to stay because the house is there, but if it's not there and it's opened, it could be dedicated to the homeowners association.
But you would say require it. Can be dedicated now, and I don't agree with that path, because just because there's not a house there now doesn't mean it couldn't become farmland in the future.
Yeah.
It couldn't be forest land, you know, and whereas if it's dedicated, so it could be working landscape. If it's dedicated to the homeowners association, you're never going to get 20 people to agree to do anything, cut trees, farm it, get cows, nothing. So I think that's a detriment, quite honestly. I mean, unless the community, that little community decides we want this for recreational, that's fine, but requiring that is not necessarily a plus. And I think that, I get the buffering requirement because we do that all the time, but I think the use of the open space parcel and not wanting that to be, you know, another house or to be kind of working landscape is an effort by the neighboring landowners to control some property that's not theirs in a way that is an overreach. That's what I feel.
Because right now we do allow someone to build a home on the open space parcel.
Right, and a lot of the, you know, the ag and the forestry and other communities look at these rural cluster developments as a good thing because they provide the opportunity for continuing working lands, not just open space, but working lands, and they push it towards that. You know, they provide that opportunity rather than having 5-acre lots across this whole thing. And everybody knows that even a 20-acre lot although in theory you could do some farming, you could do some forestry, it doesn't happen. Whereas if you cluster, so this provides an opportunity for ongoing working lands, if you allow that, that's my thought.
Am I right in this, if you had like a 100-acre lot and you wanted to make it into a cluster subdivision, you could, basic math, you could build 50 houses on that 25 acres and leave 75, but then you've got to cut out certain amounts of roads and so forth. Am I right about that?
That's roughly correct.
But it would be a maximum of 50, but it'd be a little bit less than that.
Well, those are very, very gross figures, because you've got to worry about actual topography and that kind of stuff.
So if you're talking about 25 acres and 50 houses, you're down to a half acre per lot right there.
Mm-hmm. I'd always thought that it was supposed to be what you could do by right today. And today, if you're going to do a subdivision, you have to take in if you've got steep slopes that are not buildable or wetlands that you can't build on, those have to be subtracted out of the total acreage.
Yeah,
and so if you had 100 acres and 20 of it was not buildable, now you're down.
But can you use that steep slopes and that
could be the open space.
Could be open space,
yeah.
Right?
I think that was the case with this one, wasn't it? Didn't they have topography?
Yes, it could be open space, but it doesn't go into your calculation for how many houses you can build. Now, 20 acres is wetlands and steep slopes. Now you had 80. Now you can only, forgetting about the roads, now you can only build 20 houses. No, 40 houses, excuse me.
You know, I have a peculiar view of this because I live in one of these cluster subdivisions, and Mrs. Eager developed it.
Yeah, but I wonder why you didn't put her up there.
I don't want anybody to
know. Let me give you a couple of comments about it as a practical matter, because since I live there, I know a lot about it. It has a belt of open space all the way around, so that you can start at 2 o'clock. And go all the way around the property, around the perimeter of the property, and never get off the open space. And it's designed. You got to give Mrs. Eager great credit, because she designed it very, very sensitively. A lot of the open space is stuff that you wouldn't develop anyway, because it's too steep, or there's some of it's floodplain, that kind of thing. It makes great open space because it's very scenic. I run my dog down there. Unfortunately, I don't get little turkeys on it anymore like I used to. But if all these developments were designed the way Two Rivers is, you wouldn't hear these complaints. Because when you drive by on 616, even now, when the leaves are off the trees, you have to look very hard to tell there's anything in there. It's appearance, its gross appearance, it really hasn't changed in the last 20 years. Now, you get in there, you can see one house from another. But from the exterior, all you see is trees.
And when we first did that, they told us, the VDOT, it wasn't VDOT, it was someone in the county, said you have to just take the road straight up the hill. And we didn't want to do that. We wanted it to curve so that you couldn't see the houses. And my husband met with the older gentleman who used to do VDOT, Willie. And he said, I'd like to do it this way. And Willie said, that's no problem. So, and I think Willie actually made it a better. And also, there's a steep gully, so you have to build a much more expensive road to get over that gully.
Well, the other thing is, if I sound like a booster, I feel like one. But one thing about this road entrance that is another positive is nobody speeds on it, because it has fairly sharp curves. So you just don't have any inclination to speed. You shouldn't speed to residential area. You've got children, kids playing the street and stuff like that. I think if you took Two Rivers and laid it out now, it would satisfy what you're talking about.
And the other thing, the way that road is, it keeps it more rural.
Yes, I mean, you can't see it from the road.
Yeah, now you're putting a straight road in out, and all of a sudden you're looking off right here, and you see houses and so forth like that. Of course, with those curves, you're blocking off a certain.
You know, it's funny, traffic engineers have they have their business, and they want the road to be as efficient as possible. And I had this come up in a case in Albemarle County where when they were building the John Warner Parkway and making the connections with Dunlora. I had a client that lived in right at the entrance to Dunlora, and they had the road coming out from Dunlora designed for 35 mile an hour speed limit. And I said, why do you want to do that? It's a residential area. It's naturally 25 anyway. It's going to be 25. If you do that, you can make the curve much sharper. It'll slow traffic down. It'll be consistent with the traffic you expect, and it'll avoid the need to take this property. And I said that to the engineer, and he got this look on his face like, gee, I hadn't thought about that. And that's the way they ended up doing it, and that's the same kind of solution that Mrs. Eager's talking about. So I think if you've heard me say before, and I'll say it again, that when you're talking about amending an ordinance or drafting an ordinance, first thing you need to do is figure out what the problem is, and then how you can address it. And I understand the Broken Island people. They want to. The Island Hill is a peculiar property in a lot of ways, but one way, in one respect in which it's peculiar, is that it is the perfect transitional area between the very small small lot, high density of Lake Monticello and the more conventional rural subdivision to the south. And the problem is you need more of a transition. And I think putting that kind of buffer on it would solve that problem pretty readily.
Right, and you could solve it, in this case, you could solve it with a buffer on one side of the cluster.
That's the way I would recommend.
If you put in that with an A1 zoning, you have to have 100 foot or 150 or whatever number somebody who knows planning better than me comes up with, that's very legitimate. Then you'd have the front and the whole south side, assuming this is a north-oriented map, the whole south side would be buffered. If he wanted that many lots, he'd have to build a little bit more expensive a road across the lower area there, and build houses up there in some of that, what he currently has as open space. But that would meet the needs of his development, meet the needs of the neighbors. The folks at Riverside really, although they might complain, have no legitimate reason to complain, because the density is very similar to what they have up there.
Well, it's probably less dense. That density is probably less than Riverside's gross density.
And again, I don't really agree with restrictions on the open space, because I don't think that's a good plan.
There are several rural clusters and I'm not sure I could do kind of chapter and verse that Mr. Robinson did, but there are several that were specifically designed with that in mind. Where one of them that occurs to me immediately is the Saavedra case at
Sycamore.
Yeah. It's one where the developer owned the property, wasn't a developer, but his property owner sold the development land, retained the open space parcel to build a house on. And that was his idea. That's the way he wanted to do it.
And that counts as a lot.
It counts as a lot.
That's one of the 49.
That's right.
That they were allowed. And I think that's a better way to handle it. Because then you have, if the developer and the community wants that to be in homeowner's land, great, more power to you. But if somebody wants to keep that in some kind of, whether farming, forestry, whatever, they can.
But going back to your point about what are the owner's association going to do with it? And in our case, Two Rivers case, the open space is, by and large, very difficult land. It's steep, or it's broken, or it's floodplain. So you're
not going to be doing anything very active with it anyway. Our homeowner association is mercifully not very active. And the good thing about it is basically God takes care of the trees, and we have a little bit of grass cutting along the front in a couple of the areas. And that's it.
By the creek and the river.
Right.
And that was full of trees too. And I went down there with the man that was clearing it and laid it out. And my mother said, "You're costing me too much money," because I just made it bigger so that you could have a ball field down there. You could have picnics. You could get to the river. But I chose to do it that way so that they'd be able to use it. There's a path down there. You can drive a car down there.
I agree with the server. I don't think we should cut that provision out.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And I kind of feel the same way about the lot sizes. You know? I mean, I think, as you said, identify a problem, find a solution that does the best you can to meet that problem. I think the problem is putting these very small lots, high density area, close to an A1 district that may have been divided up into 5-acre, 10-acre, whatever lots. That's a problem. The lot sizes, they're not really part of that problem. How the open space, you know, the residual space gets utilized and whether it has a house on it or not, I don't really think that's part of the problem. So, I think buffering solves the identified
problem. Yeah, and remember, it's not buffering, it's open space. We don't buffer residential to residential. So
I'm just a dumb forester.
I'm going to find that out. Well,
so having open space that acts as a buffer between A1 and A1 district.
Now, one other thing, Chairman, some parts of Virginia and other parts of the United States actually use clustering provisions for what you would call theme development, equestrian subdivision, where they have a common horse stable, sometimes two or three. Other parts of the country, like that's done up in Loudoun County and Fauquier County. Other areas where I grew up in high school, rural clustering provision, there was an airfield, and actually four airplane hangars where the people who lived in those homes did not own a car, and they actually flew to their job and flew to recreational things. So I mean, when you're in Nebraska and it's flat as can be, that's what you can do with the land, kind of like you're talking about. So there are opportunities in some. So yeah, don't do that. You'd be helicoptering in and out.
Not unless you got beast oil.
Do we have the actual state code about what we're required to have? I remember it being 40% of your A1 or your rural had to be allowed for cluster subdivision.
Yeah, I don't have the statute with me, but the statute is really pretty general. I think it has some criteria, but it's very general. It's not the kind of specificity that we have in our ordinance.
And I have a question too about the way they did their comparison plan. It's called something else.
A yield plan.
Yeah. They've gotten all of this here, but look at these things out here. Could you actually build a house over here?
Yes, they did. We went over that with
you
them.
Did it?
We went over that with them very carefully.
Good. Okay. So it should be the same for everybody.
Yeah. That was one of the major issues. Yeah. And we went over that very carefully. They established it. I think they actually tweaked it a little bit, but it was substantially paid.
Good.
Because after you brought your concern to me about the 20% slow tumbling in the floodplain, I went to them and told them they needed to subtract that out. And he brought to my attention that our ordinance didn't worry exactly like that.
It should.
Well, we had a meeting about this, mm-hmm. and there was some give and take. Mm-hmm. But developer tweaked the plan, and staff was satisfied with it.
Didn't we have to take one lot out when we did it, in front of it because of the way the road ran?
Well, they had one lot to come out, but they put it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
we lose the lot.
Because when you were looking at it, you found out it was too close to the road the way the ordinance was written.
Yeah, the road had a
was, there was a setback requirement from, not from the internal road, but from South Boston. And they took it out. That's why that open space is there.
That's what I removed it from.
Yeah, that's right.
So shouldn't that be in the ordinance, that it has to be yield to what you could actually do?
It is.
Well, I thought you said that it wasn't.
No, it is.
It is written that way?
Yeah.
They just didn't agree, it sounded like.
No, there was.
I mean, what was the give and take about?
Well, there was some question about what the extent of the slopes and what the degree of slope was. Pretty detailed technical things.
The other thing that Mrs. Beck brought up, and some of the things that we discussed with Mrs. Eager, Brad and I, was that there should be some hardscapes and some paths and some, you know, passive recreational things in there. And I'll let you know from experience that people in other localities I've worked in do not want people walking behind their house, do not want hardscape things that they have to maintain, that if it's not deed restricted, like you said, Mr. Zimmer, no one's going to maintain it. So sometimes we're chasing our tail to find out, you know, what solves and suits people. And really the only way, like I was mentioning earlier, if people want a theme development, or they all want to ride horses, or they all want to do something. There's ones on coastal communities where they all have boats. They have, you know, so, I mean,
all that can happen. All the hardscaping can happen if the developer and the community wants to.
Developer has that written in, and then if you don't want to buy, correct. So if you already have that established, and that's what draws you to that community, then you go and live in that community. But there are opportunities where people have chosen not to buy in there because of that, or that's exactly what they wanted and they did. So,
right.
So that's kind of where the ordinance is not, it's not written in the ordinance, it's deed restricted through that developer's vision or what have you.
Coming with Mr. Miles's comments about the themed developments, particularly the equestrian developments. I can think of two in our, one in Fluvanna County, one in Albemarle County, that actually do have elements of that. They're not quite, I don't think they're quite as well developed as he's talking about, but the one in Fluvanna is South Keswick, which is, it's a disastrously badly designed subdivision in my judgment, but one of the things it did, but contemplated equestrian activities, because it has easements along the property lines, and it's specifically designed for equestrian trails. It turned out to be when I say it's a disaster, we were involved in some litigation there, and it was, you know, the problem was, if your neighbor wants to be annoying, all he has to do is ride his horse up and down the side of your property. You have to pay the taxes and maintain it, but he gets to ride his horse up and down, and you can't stop it. Now, the other one Glenmore at the front has a pretty substantial equestrian facility, and it's not, again, it's not as fully developed as Mr. Miles was talking about, but it's the same basic concept. There's no reason you can't do that.
Yeah. That's what I mean, this hardscaping and all that. I mean, I'm just opposed. I mean, if the community wants to do it, that's their right. But I think the county making them do that, or not allowing, you know, farming or whatever on this open space, I think that's wrong. I don't think that's a good plan.
Well, like you said, it ends up that nobody maintains it, so forth like that.
It's either really great, or as Mr. Tang, it's really bad. There's nothing in between. And that's just, you know, you drive around in any older subdivision, after 30 years, your subdivision is generationally tapping out, and you have to new people move in.
If it's really great, it's really great for the first couple of homeowners, that you know, and then eventually the community changes over time. It's just like anything, when you have a conservation easement,
right?
People who donate the fourth people owning that property, you have to enforce your easement rules constantly, because no matter what they were told when they bought it, they didn't get any benefit.
I didn't get that paperwork, I didn't.
Well, they didn't get any benefit, they didn't pay tax credit, they didn't get paid for that, so they don't care anymore.
One case that you might want to consider in terms, not in terms of the development controls, because there weren't any, but in terms of the actual layout of the property is Farmington. Because when Farmington was laid out, it was a big plantation type estate, and the golf course was built first. And Farmington is very peculiar in that it doesn't have any dedicated roads. The subdivision streets are actually on land that's owned by the golf course. And what, it has that effect that, Mr. Zimmer, what you're talking about was, my lot is here, your lot is here, and there's this space in between it that's not owned, it's not a lot. It's owned by the golf course, and it's maintained by the golf course.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about the owner association being owned or whatever. You've got another entity that takes care of it. And just, you know, if you go and look at Farmington, just drive around in there, try not to get arrested. But if you go and drive around, look at it, you'll see what I'm talking about. It's not the product of real design. It's a product of sort of a concept that's been maintained. And it's an example of one that doesn't die out after the first two generations, because Farmington was developed in the 20s. And it really, its character hasn't changed.
But that's because of the business entity that has a vested interest in continuing that character.
That's right, that's my point.
And that's a very good one. So, and also the other thing is, from a planning perspective, we would rather have 50 lots in the close-in planning area as opposed to 50 lots on Route 6 and West River Estates. Because you keep doing 50 lots over time, and then you need a school up there and a fire station, and bus routes are running twice as long. So just keep in mind that rural clustering is just one option that people would have, and we prefer that they not even have that in non-close communities.
Because that's it does say, some years ago, there was a lot of rural clusters established. In fact, during the recession or whatever, they stopped us from, because they didn't do what they were supposed to do for a certain period of time. We couldn't
vacate the
thing. Is that still in effect?
I think it's expired, but I need to go back. It's a peculiar statute that talks about this 5-year period and that 5-year period, but there were a couple of developments that were actually platted, but they were abandoned, and they've actually been formally abandoned. One of them was that went towards Sam Patterson's place.
That was abandoned?
Yeah. It was one of the bigger ones.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of it.
But it was...
Did they come back and change it to 10-acre lot thing?
No, they came back and put a conservation easement on it.
Oh, you're talking about Walker's Ridge.
No, not Walker's Ridge. That was another one. That wasn't A1.
Or Poplar Ridge.
Poplar Ridge.
Poplar Ridge was the last
second iteration.
What I'm talking about is the one that...
Is that Troy Road?
I'm trying to think where it is. There's some other matters to a property.
Yeah, he's on Troy Road.
I can't remember the name of it, but it was a big subdivision. And it was approved and everything, and the economy fell apart, and they ended up putting one of our first county conservation easements.
Yeah, a lot of builders went bankrupt.
Yeah, they did, and it was Mike Himes, I think.
Mm-hmm, I think so.
I think he was the developer. Just wasn't economical for them to develop anymore. Right. One thing to remember is that one thing about any kind of cluster development or planned development, Mrs. Eager will tell you all about this, it's got disproportionately front-end loaded cost of it. Because with it, you know, if you got a conventional development, you know, I don't want to oversimplify it, but it's basically pretty simple. You figure out what size you want, you know, 2 to 5 acres, and you sort of whack it up. It's pretty simple. With clusters, it's much more, you have to do much more front-end planning. And I think that that actually has deterred some development, because people didn't want to put that much front-end investment.
In an older type, you could build a house and sell it, and then you go to the next lot. Without designing the roadways and all of that.
Yeah, our firm has a client in Greene County that that is a conventional development, but it has some open space with it. And it's been in the course of development for, I think, 20-some years, and it's still not built out. And that's kind of the thing you're talking about. One of the things about it is, the good news about it is that if you have to plan it from the beginning so that you've got a picture of what it's going to look like when you get done, you have a much better thought out plan.
It was, I don't think we made much money on it, honestly. There's so much cost, and we'd never done it before. We made a lot of mistakes. I didn't realize that you didn't have to put the road down until you had most of the houses built. So we put the road in, of course, with the moving of, you know, the cement trucks and people bringing the heavy thing. Pulling the road up, we had to do that twice. And down at the bottom, we made that look like a pretty park. I don't know that a traditional builder would probably do that. You know, you might just say, okay, if you can get down there, look good. But and it really was a friend of ours who is a builder. He came to us and he said, we hadn't sold any lots. And he said, you have to build the first one and then they'll come. And he was right. We built the first one. He did it. And then after that, it seemed to snowball. People were attracted to it.
We could visualize what this was going to look like.
Yeah. But they, it didn't sell the way we thought it would. And that might have been just us not knowing how much things should cost.
Of course, Bull and Bear had a lot to do with that.
Yes.
Yeah. You hit the ground just about the wrong time.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that you made any money at all means that it was a well-designed development, desirable development, because a lot of people went completely belly up with that at that time.
So I have one question, Ed, just to make sure I'm clear. Are you saying you are or are not in favor of the open space being privately owned?
He said,
I
am.
You are.
I am.
As an option.
As an option, of course.
Yeah.
Because that was actually, that's one thing the citizens in Broken Island were opposed to. They don't like the fact that the open space can be privately owned.
Well, I've also seen some of these places where the open space became part of the homeowners association and it went to nothing.
Right, and if that's what they want to do, that's great. Do it. But
I think that option should be there.
I don't think it should be.
Shouldn't be required.
That's wrong. But I think I say that. Whether you can or cannot do, you know, farming and forestry and all those things on that homeowner association land, it won't happen because you can't get the homeowner association to agree to do that.
Right. And there might be timbering that should be done.
Exactly. The only place I know that sort of has that set up is Bondura. And all the land is owned by the homeowner association, but the business side of the homeowner association has control of that. They're the ones that, and I think they actually are allowed to practice some of their farming and forestry activities on the property you actually own. It's a really strange thing over there.
Bondura is a funny place because it's I think it's 650 acres.
Right.
And it's, I remember walking into an Alamo County Planning Commission meeting one time, and they had a plat wondered on the wall, and it was far enough away that I couldn't see the details, but you could see the, you know, the character of the property. And it looked like a conventional subdivision, but it looked like a conventional subdivision that would have been about 50 acres.
Right.
Because everything was, it was just magnified.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, of course, when the houses cost $2 million, you can do a lot of weird things. You got a lot of different kind of folks who are buying those houses.
And that maintenance is taken care of by that wealth.
Exactly. They maintain the property through their farming activities. They have livestock. They harvest timber and all that kind of stuff. It's really strange, but again, it happens because that business entity has the ability to make it happen, even though they don't. Even though the land, some of the land is sort of commonly held in the homeowner association, it doesn't happen when you have to get 25 of your neighbors to agree. Let's raise some cows on this. Let's turn this into a farming operation. Let's cut some trees. Anything like that never happens.
Well, the other thing you're correct. The other thing, the other element that comes into this with development like that is you got professional management, because if you've got a small owners association, everything's volunteer, and you're just not going to have the same kind of hands-on attention that you would if you had a professional. And that's the one where you really get in. First generation lot owners are real interested in it. You get fired up from being the owners association, and you've been there for 20 years. Kind of tired of it.
Yeah. New people moving in have no desire.
So I just put up on the screen the section of the code that spells out what all is permitted in open space. So A talks about the construction of a dwelling. B, we already permit agriculture, horticulture, silviculture. C, we already have a provision that allows parks, playgrounds, preserves, conservation areas, hunting and boating clubs, and small boat docks. D, public utilities. E, cable communications distribution lines. F, public uses and structures. Public uses, example, I guess a library or something like that. And then G, water wells and other facilities. A was the item, I guess, some of the residents express displeasure to us about. And we do have a provision for a lot of different things in the open space.
Well, I think that the other part that we talked about putting the open space had to be closer to the adjoining areas would solve that problem to a certain extent.
Right.
And you know, like for instance, you had an older person. They couldn't farm this big piece of property anymore, but they still wanted to maintain their home there and have a little small whatever there. Maybe they have a horse or whatever, and they want to develop that because they can't farm anymore. You know, so if you change that, you deny that person that.
So are we going to require more buffering?
That's my next question.
Okay.
We've got to figure out how we move forward, and I guess if there's any recommendations for a particular type of buffer. And I guess what I want clarification on is we're speaking of from the property line of the adjoining parcel to the rear property line of the lots containing the residential uses.
I mean, my recommendation, and I don't know about the footage, I'll just say 100 feet. That would require to be 100 feet, but not require screening or anything like that. If that's going to be farmland, that's farmland. If it's going to be trees, that's trees. You know, if it's going to be open space, but that the open space for the last big lot, as the case may be, is part of that.
Part of that.
And it's a buffer. And 100 foot sounds good to me, but maybe that's not a good planning practice. I don't know. You guys would know better than I do.
you might want to, I don't have a particular feeling about that either, but you might want to express it in terms of the distance is relative to the size of the lot. So if you've got, let's say if you want to have 100-foot spacing and you have a 50-foot setback on the lot, you've got to have another 50 feet on the open space. Or 100 feet, 100 feet, 100 feet. Or 50 feet and 100 feet, whatever.
He's talking about the back end. There's the lot, and then there's the open space.
Oh, yeah, yes. So whatever development I'm doing requires a 50-foot setback from my back property.
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't have a firm feeling of it.
So that would be 50.
Planning
would create 100. That would create a 100-foot buffer all by itself from the house, not the property.
Effectively, yeah.
Gotcha. That sounds good.
Mr. Robinson now has heard what you said, and he's going to write it down, and he's going to fix it.
But
if he screws up, you'll have to remind
him. Oh, yes. Mr. Chair, that's the one question.
Sure. So, just so I understand, you're looking for 100 feet from the back of the property line.
I don't want to put a number on it because that's,
I think looking at a lot of these clusters, I think a lot of them, I think there's a lot of them that wouldn't meet that today, even possibly Two Rivers.
I think what Mr. Zimmer was
right.
100 feet from the back of the house.
For
right?
instance, because I know two people that, yeah. I've got family that live in Two Rivers too. That's
Dell's mother was doors down from me.
But were you talking about 100 foot from, let's say, the back of the house, right?
Right.
Not
that,
from the actual property line.
Or something. I'm not wedded to 100 feet.
Yeah.
That's not my number particularly. But these guys can put a much better figure on that. In effect, what you'd be wanting to do was to make the appearance of it as if it were a conventional lot.
Correct.
So if you had a conventional lot that had to be 300 feet deep with a 50-foot front setback, you'd end up with 100 feet on the backside. You could have 50 feet of that be in the open space and 50 feet be in the lot. And again, don't get bogged down in my numbers because I'm just throwing the numbers out. But that's the kind of thing I was thinking of.
So the screen I'm referring to this line here where I'm hovering my cursor to here.
Right.
Is what the recommendation would be for that area. And you're saying 100 feet for that?
Is that 100 feet?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I would say if that's 100 feet or not is a bit immaterial. Because, I mean, if this just isn't suitable for a cluster development, it's not suitable for a cluster development. I mean, it seems to me, maybe because there are lot setbacks, I didn't take that into account because I'm a dumb forester, not a planner. Maybe Mr. Payne's point is a good one. Maybe 100 feet of that distance is too much. Maybe we're looking to get buildings 100 feet away, 100 feet from the property.
Because on the individual lots, there's a 25-foot rear setback.
So maybe you phrase it.
I have to stop us because we have to go to our regular meeting. So we're going to end our work session this time. We will be opening our regular session of the March 10th, 2020 regular planning commission. This time, our first order of business will be a pledge of allegiance followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The next order of business is the director's report.
So this, in your packet, we, as you see, we've
Not any board cases, planning cases in February and March. Same with the Board of Zoning Appeals, we do have one coming up this month. But we did have the Zion Crossroads Self-Storage Technical Review that's coming before you tonight. We've had the SunTribe Solar site plan submittal, this is the second school location, Carriersburg was the first. And these are some of our meetings that we've had recently to update you all as the planning commission. We held our, held a meeting with the TJ Health District Office, getting information for up-to-date information in the comprehensive plan on some of their numbers and projections that they have. We just attended them today at lunch, the VDOT SmartSkill Projects meeting with Chuck Proctor and the folks in the region. So you can see that the two that we've identified are Route 53 and Turkey Side Trail for roundabout location. And then the other one for some turn lane improvements, Route 53, Roarton Lake Road, Route 250 and Troy Road, and 15 and Troy Road. Those are all ones that we've had previously and that we're trying to climb in the rankings for the VDOT Smart Scale projects. The other one that's really, we're also going to file as a Smart Scale project, but it's one that's been needed for a while, and VDOT actually has partial funding for it. We're going to request additional funding. That's the South Boston Lake Monticello Road intersection at the bottom of the dam there, the sharp intersection there. So that's one that I think Chuck Proctor is wanting us to rank on probably the highest once we have the start of the construction of the Colonial Circle roundabout in about 2 weeks. And that leads right into the VDOT Town Hall. Since we're not meeting again before them, the VDOT's conducting this, I thought I'd bring it before you. Next Wednesday, March 18th at 6 p.m. over at the Fairway Clubhouse on 51 Bunker Boulevard, they'll have a VDOT Town Hall meeting. Anyone is welcome to attend that. You don't have to reside at the lake. That's an open public meeting for all. That's all I have for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
The next item is that minutes of our February the 10th, 2020 meeting. Does anybody have any comments about us? And I skipped the spot here, so I got to go backwards. Right now is our first of two public comment sections for the night. Anyone wanting to come speak on any item other than the items on the agenda tonight can come forward, state your name and address. You'll be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will go to our minutes of our last meeting. Anyone have any changes or anything that we need to talk about from our last meeting? Or do I have a motion about our minutes from our last meeting? Okay, we have a motion from Mr. Largocino to accept the minutes as written. Do I have a second? Have a second from Ms. Mary Key. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 4-0 and one absent. There's no public hearing, so we'll go on down to the next item. We have a site development plan for tonight. SDP 2001, Zion Crossroads Self-Storage. Kamal will be bringing up for us.
Yes, good evening, Chairman Bibb, members of the commission again. Mr. Ray and his engineer, Mr. Keith, are here tonight to represent the Zion Crossroads Self-Storage building. So this is a request sketch plan approval for the final construction of a 50 by 150 self-storage climate control building. It is located on a B1 property, which is a by right use for that area. And the surrounding area is B1 and I1 out there on off of 250 and Memory Lane. crossroads area. And then the access road that you see there, Better Living Drive, where you come in and then you enter the self-storage facility. And then that's the aerial view of that location, and right where the RVs are currently parked, and then the last building, climate control next to the office, would be constructed. And this is part of their sketch plan. That's the location of the building. And doing a site visit, the site's very clean, well laid out, operational. The access road is serving its needs. The lighting and screening is adequate for that facility there. So there are the 10 existing buildings located there. No additional changes were needed for parking and landscaping, and as well as no erosion and sediment control required. So this is really just coming before you all to finalize this development.
And their main access basically is through the Better Living, where they have access through there. So
yes, to 250. Correct. And VDOT did not have any comments as well. It's the same or similar traffic pattern.
Anybody have any questions, Mr. Miles? Anybody have any questions from the developer?
Mr. Braden is engineer, Mr. Keeger here tonight.
Doesn't look like anybody has any questions. Does anybody have a motion?
I'm going to approve SDP 2001, a sketch plan request to construct your pursuit by 150 self-storage building with respect to 10.25 acres of tax map 5, section 7, parcel 9B, subject to the two conditions listed in the staff report.
I have a motion from Ms. Mary Key. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Mr. Zimmer. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0, 1 absent. The next item on the agenda for tonight is the second of two public comment sections. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak anything about the county, please come forward, state your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end the second public comment section. And if there's no other business,